Hi, this is Anthony Pascal.
And this is Laurie Elster.
And this is All Access Star Trek.
We are going to be reviewing the 8th episode of Lower Decks, Veritas, but first, we're just going to cover a little bit of news in the Star Trek world, starting with the Emmys that happened last Sunday, although they did a bunch of creative arts ones over a couple of days. So Star Trek Picard won one.
Yay! It won the same one that Discovery won the last year.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Some of the same people.
And it was the specific category was outstanding prosthetic makeup for a series, limited series, movie, or special.
So Picard went in with 5 nominations, all in the quote creative arts Emmys, and it's a lot of the ones that Trek usually gets nominated for, and it came out 1 out of 5.
I'm still a little disappointed he wasn't nominated for acting. I think he should have been.
CBS tried their bestest. They put him out there, and Patrick Stewart, and they really made a concerted effort. There was an outdoor campaign in LA. So they, you know, really wanted, he did get a little bit of buzz in the end. You know, you'd show up on long shot lists, which is, you know, actually better than Trek usually does. But I guess Nimoy is still the last actor to be nominated, which is 50 years. So, you know, it's about time for Trek to get nominated. Mandalorian did pretty well, but one of the things that it has at its advantage is it is a shorter program. So it was in a different category. And that's one of the reasons that really kind of helped The Mandalorian. Although it's an excellent show and I love it. The music was great and they won an Emmy for that. But I feel like Picard could have done better. It was not the worst year. There's been a number of years in Trek history where it was nominated for a number of awards and came away with nothing. So, you know, including 2 years ago when Discovery was up for a couple and didn't win anything. The other thing is Short Treks was up for a major award, roughly, for its category, which is Outstanding Short Form. And I thought it had a really good shot at that. And it went to AMC for this thing they did on the web for Better Call Saul, which is an amazing show. But I feel like, they won the short category just because Better Call Saul is great. But I feel like this web thing was not up to the same par as Short Treks.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, it's tough. There's so much great TV being made right now. We're in a really good time for great TV. So it's very competitive out there.
Right.
Well, there's one other bit from the Emmys we wanted to talk about just quickly.
Right.
I watched the show because I'm obsessed with the Emmys, the Oscars, and the Golden Globes. Those are my 3 live events every year. And it was a weird show, but what was nice to see was in the In Memoriam segment, DC Fontana was like right up there near the top with a nice Trek graphic behind her. And Renee Bourgeois also was in there. And even though he's had a tremendous career doing so much television, movies, theater, everything, they chose to put up a Deep Space Nine image, which I thought was really nice.
Yeah, it was both very nice. Some people wondered why wasn't Aaron Eisenberg in there, and it would have been nice, but I guess they, you know, he didn't make the cut. But it was still, I think, good to see 2 Trek actors, although, of course, very sad with the passing of both. And it's also just sad that Star Trek, is this the only way Star Trek gets into the main ceremony, the primetime Emmy ceremony, is through the passing of these legendary actors.
Well, I think if it had been a normal ceremony, they would have tried to get Patrick Stewart to present. I'm sure they would have.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
We've definitely seen a lot of Star Trek actors present at both the Emmys and the Oscars.
Yeah. So I think we would have been. You know, look, Aaron's in good company. They always leave out some names that get people angry, and they're always people who deserve to be in. So it was sad. I was sad that he wasn't in there also, but it happens. I think there was the year Joan Rivers died, I think she was left out.
Right. There was also, you know, you got to love fans. They were nitpicking how they projected DC Fontana on the Enterprise D And it, people were like, well, it should have been the original Enterprise, because even though she worked on Next Generation, she left the show fairly early on. And it's like, come on, guys.
Yeah, just be happy she was there, okay?
Yeah. And it's, I think it's actually just easier to do because the Enterprise D is so huge. It's easier to do the projected image thing anyway. So that's just that you just got to love Star Trek fans. I mean, we're, you know, not that we're not Star Trek fans, but there's always something. There's always something.
Yep.
Keep it coming. Nitpick away. You know, we get nitpicked in the, you know, comments all the time. We get grammar nitpicks and, you know, all sorts of nitpicks. And, you know, it's like, I love it.
Keep I'm
it
pretty coming. Nitpicky myself.
Yeah, we nitpick each other. So yes, there we do. Go. Now, this isn't news per se, or could be, depending on your point of view. We talked briefly about this a few weeks ago of one of our discovery theories. So last week on the site, we did the big theory about the burn, which we think is the Omega molecule. And that's all over the site. It was very popular. This week we did another theory. And this theory went into a major character we could see in the 32nd century. Obviously, jumping forward 930 years, leaves behind all of those 23rd century. So there's no running into Harry Mudd and, you know, imagine, you know, there's so many, you know, Spock and Pike, they just kept on running into people. That's not really possible in the 32nd century, but there are some possibilities. And so we kind of went through everything we've seen, and there's no given that we will see a major character, but, you know, the track record of these guys is, you know, I mean, remember, they said, we'll never do Spock, and then they did Spock, they did Pike, they did the Enterprise, they did it all, you know, so they just can't help themselves. So I feel like they're going to try to bring in a character, for sure.
And people liked it. I mean, those things were popular.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And so they have their blank slate in the future, but that doesn't mean they're not going to bring in some familiar characters. So we went through everything we learned, and step by step, and basically, we're like, well, we've seen Trill. They said they're going to Trill, right? And then once you put together the fact that Trill symbionts have no official lifespan limit. I mean, we've heard of them in, you know, hundreds of years old. But, you know, couldn't they be 1,000 years old?
Yeah, I couldn't find anything on Memory Alpha or anywhere else that talked about the lifespan of a symbiont.
Right. Now, I believe, according to canon, the Dax symbiont was born in 2018. So right now, the Dax symbiont is in his first host and is only two. So there you go. And we're projecting he could still be alive, or he, I'm not sure what the gender is.
What's with the he business?
The symbiont. It, I guess, is the closest, right?
Sure.
We'll still be alive in 3188, which is where we're headed. So if the Dax symbiont is alive, because we know we're seeing Trill, we've seen them in trailers, we know we're going to Trill, we know we're seeing, more importantly, the pools of Trill. I won't pronounce the cave, but there's these caves and there's these pools and the worms swim around and they got the zappy stuff going on and they're all telepathic and we've seen Michael standing next to the pool. So it's all starting to add up, but then you go, well, okay, well, if they got Dax, is Dax going to join with someone? And some people are like, Dax is going to join with Michael, but no, that's not going to happen.
Oh, please.
Yeah. I mean, in a way,
hasn't she been through enough?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I just don't see that happening. But This season, they're introducing two characters, one of which is a Trill, named Gray, played by Ian Alexander, who's a trans man, and who's playing a trans Trill man. And his backstory is that he really wants to be joined. He's very young, and that's the other thing about the Trill is they join them when they're young, right? But adults, so they don't join kids. You have to be a volunteer, and so it all fits. And so that would bring Dax into the future. It would be great to have Dax be able to talk about. Dax could kind of fill us in on what's happened in the last 800 years.
So, and you did a great job, I think, just outlining step by step all the little pieces that have led us to this theory. So if you want to read all the details and see, basically, Tony builds a case for it, people. So you can go through step by step. It's a combination of story elements and things we've heard in interviews, and then a good little conclusion at the end with some extra juicy details that might convince you that this is what they're planning to do. So go to trekmovie.com.
Now, and you'll see I gave myself a little wiggle room because maybe this is something that's been put up by some others that I agree with, even though it all adds up to it adds up to gray becoming Dax, gray Dax. It could be the other new character who we don't know if it's a Trill, doesn't really look Trill, but maybe for some reason they join. And so Adira played by Blue DiBario.
It's a lot of new names.
Right, because the actors, one of the characters' name is Gray, and one of the actors' names is Blue. So that's, you know, but so there's two new characters, and we're saying Dax is going to join one of them. And it could be the obvious one, but we're thinking maybe it's the not obvious one because, you know, they're going to throw us a twist. So check it out.
But we don't think it's Michael.
We don't think it's Michael or you know, or anyone else on the ship. It's one of these characters. Because, you know, they said they're leaning into Trill mythology. I mean, you know, they're telegraphing. This is another thing they're telegraphing.
Yeah.
There's really no other news. But I kind of wanted to take a quick break to talk about non-news. people send us tweets or send us links to articles, and you've probably seen these in social media and on Reddit. You know, like blaring headlines, you know, that all the Star Trek movies have been canceled, or
I like the Will Smith one. That Will Smith is starring in the next Star Trek movie.
Right. And it's like within days of each other, the same website's putting up the same thing. Right. Or, you know, all the CBS shows have been canceled. Netflix has dropped Star Trek Discovery. I mean, you know, you're just constantly seeing this. And there's a lot of people on YouTube who push these things.
And they say Patrick Stewart hates Star Trek Picard.
Right. It's just, and we don't cover these things on the sites, and we don't debunk these things, you know, like, you know, but for some reason, Paramount felt the need to like let people know they are still working on their movies. It's bullshit. And I just, you know, want to say, like, there's an industry of clickbait out there, and, you know, just, I'm not saying only trust Trek Movie, absolutely, but think of, you know, the ecosystem of Deadline and Variety and all these other sites. And some of these sites, what they'll say is, well, we were right about this one thing, but they're putting out so many rumors. It's the broken clock thing, especially because what they're doing is they're just speculating and they're making these things up. And some things are obvious. Like, of course, there was going to be a TV show with Pike in it.
Right.
You know, starting last year. So you can't say we were right that there was a Pike show. It's like, well, of course there was going to be a Pike show because, you know, it was, and they've been kind of hinting at it for a year. So you can't really say, you know, point to that and say you're right. So just, you know, and some of these sites are citing 4chan threads as their sources. And then there's other people who are now creating fake 4chan threads to fool these other people, to trick them into covering it. So it's just, just be careful. There's a reason why we don't constantly debunk these things. But so this is kind of my one and only, I'm just debunking them all. Like, I'm not saying every rumor is wrong, but it's pointless to constantly, because every week there's more and more of them. And it's just too much. Go ahead.
Well, here's the other piece of that, just because I've done a lot of writing. I've done like trending news for various websites where I'm just picking up stories every day and writing, again, like not real journalism where you go get your own story, but where you find stuff on the web and then write it up in your own voice and hopefully add maybe a different perspective. And so the thing that I've learned when I'm doing this is you'll find a fact and you'll go, I want to make sure it's true. So I want to see it on more than one site. And then you can find it on 15 different sites. But you have to look very carefully because most of the time, those 15 sites are all sourced from the same one piece of false information. So yeah, it's not that it's being backed up by 15 sources. It's not. It's the same source. So you have to look at them and see. They usually say in an interview with, or they have a link or something that tells you where they got the story. And what you want to do is find that source and try to determine, is that a reputable source? And then did other reputable sources back it up? And a lot of times you will find that, no, it was some theory someone posted and then everybody's quoting it, or some random tweet. So just be careful and pay attention to where you're getting your information. I know it's all fun stuff to talk about, but a lot of it just doesn't need to be taken seriously, right?
Yeah, I think it's time to talk about Lower Decks.
Let's talk about Lower Decks. Veritas is the title, which means truth. It was very much about truth.
Yes, and it's the 8th episode, so we're into the last 3, because there's only 10 for the season.
Oh, I'm going to be very sad when it all ends.
Although, the minute it ends, we've got something to look forward to right away, right? Which is episode 1 of Discovery.
But it won't be funny and wacky and made in a cartoon.
Well, the scenes with Tilly are, except it's not a cartoon. Although sometimes she is a bit cartoonish, let's face it.
But she also probably makes me cry more than anyone else. So she's very real to me and not cartoony. Anyway, back to Lower Decks. So what did you think of this episode overall? What are your high level thoughts?
I liked it. I didn't love it. It was good. It was experimental, I felt, a little bit in the narrative structure. It had some great guest stars, especially Kurtwood Smith, of course, who you just can't go wrong. But he created a new character, Klar, and I loved that. So there was a lot of elements I like, but I'm not sure I liked the sum of the parts. And I think in some cases it did that thing we've talked about before where it's going over old ground. And sometimes I feel like the show is constantly trying to justify its own existence and explain itself over and over again. So it's like, this is another episode explaining the premise of Lower Decks, which is the Lower Deckers have their stories and the upper senior officers have their own stories and they don't always know what's going on. It's like, well, we've gotten, you know, we're 7 episodes in, we've kind of got that. And
right.
This episode was kind of, it felt like a long setup joke to that punchline, which we already knew. But that being said, I still liked it. When I say it's a middle episode of Lower Decks, I love Lower Decks. So that's a good, you know, that's a good episode. It's an enjoyable 24 minutes of my life watching it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I felt a lot of the same way. I felt that, right, the setup, because it was all leading up to this sort of punchline at the end, it meant that it was sometimes hard to attach the details of what was happening because we didn't know. And so, of course, it's one of those episodes that is really fun on a rewatch. But not everybody is like me and is going to watch something multiple times because they're doing a podcast. So, like, I'm watching it for various reasons. I thought it started to pick up speed once Rutherford started telling his story because his was just so funny.
Right.
And all those jokes were so good. And I also just think, big picture wise, I thought it was especially well directed and like the angles and the choices of how everything should look. And then things like the Vulcan Museum and the Romulan warbirds, like, were just actually beautiful to look at. So the quality's still up there. It was just the choice of storytelling. And again, like you, I like that they experiment. It doesn't always work well. So the first time I watched it, I got at the beginning, I was a little bit like, can we get to it already? Like, I wanted to get to the point, except that I kept laughing at Kurtwood Smith.
Do you feel that the episode requires you to watch it again to kind of understand what happens?
No. I mean, I think First of all, I think you have to remember that it is a cartoon and that it's meant to basically just keep you entertained. So it's not like a big story that you need to fit. You can just sit back and enjoy it. I just enjoyed those parts more on the second viewing. But okay. I would, again, it probably depends what level of fan you are and how obsessive you are when you're watching it, maybe.
Because I feel like it, if you want to try to figure it all out, you do have to watch it again. But I think, in a way, part of the point of the episode is you aren't supposed to figure it all out and how it all fits together, per se. Because right. that's the, you know, there's a blissful ignorance to the Lower Deckers as expressed by Mariner at the end.
You know what it makes me think about now? Is the actual episode Lower Decks of TNG, right? You have all these Lower Deckers and they each get assigned, well, not all of them, a piece of this secret mission that they're on. And they don't know what the others are doing. So you have one in sickbay who's like, you have one who knows everything because they filled her in because she's going to go sacrifice and take the risk, which is Sito, right? And then you have one in medical, Ogawa, who only knows that she's, that there's a Cardassian there, right? Like that's the only thing that she knows. And then you have Torek, who only knows he's trying to make a shuttle look like it's been fired on. And they're not allowed to share the pieces of their information, so they can't combine it to build a picture. So it is kind of the same premise as that specific episode in a lot of ways, but without the dark, sad ending.
Yeah, exactly.
With a total twist on the ending to the complete opposite.
Yeah, and I think there's a big question of do you see or not see the twist coming? I started kind of feeling it as we were getting towards the end. So,
oh, I didn't, you know, by the way. I did not.
So now this is an homage, and Mike telegraphed this. He talked about this, I think, early in the season at one of these panels, saying again they're doing greatest hits. So they've done the malfunction in the holodeck episode, and they're kind of covering. And this is their courtroom episode,
right?
And in that way, I think they did a lot of great homages. I mean, you know, the whole look was obviously right out of Star Trek VI. And I think that was a lot of fun, the way they played with that. And of course, twisted it at the end, where it wasn't, you know, a Klingon trial. The judge wasn't a judge. He was just a guy waiting to set up his daughters, you know. So, you know, that was all very, very fun. The balloons. And
I love the balloons. I loved when he turned up the lights and there were balloons.
And he said, "This is one of our nicer silos," or yes. something.
Like I got that. Married here. That was, I laughed out loud at that for sure. That's the thing is, so even whenever I was sort of not as focused on the story of what was going on, as soon as he started talking, I was right back there.
So of the three, Mariner, Rutherford, and Tandy each had a piece of the story. There was and each was kind of bearing witness to a different officer. So Mariner was witnessing the captain. Rutherford was witnessing for Shax and Billups. And Tandy was witnessing for Ransom. So of the three, which, you know, your favorite was the Rutherford story?
Yeah, there were so many funny little elements in his that just made me laugh, including the, not just the Gordon wedding, which I'm sure everybody loves, but just when he was standing on the cloaked ship and then kept bumping into it, I thought that was really funny. And the whole resetting the Klingon font joke was so nerdy and good. Like, why would I even need that? So his was my favorite, although Tendi's just so sweet. In hers, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love how she, you know, she is so excited about cleaning the room, and then she gets misunderstood as, quote, the cleaner, and ends up on this special ops mission.
She apologizes to the enemy before she beats them up.
But she was, I like how she was going to try to tell the truth, because the truth is a recurring theme for this, as was miscommunication. But she never could, because the Andorian kept on scanning.
Right.
There's a lot of scanning. And there was a little bit of an homage to, There's the famous scene of the Enterprise being surrounded by three warbirds. Neutral Zone? Was that the episode?
Maybe.
I don't know. I'll have to look that up. That'll be in our eggs article. Yeah, no, that was definitely the most fun one. I liked how eventually he started getting his blackouts. He liked the blackouts and was, you know, did the Gorn wedding. He was kind of hoping the blackout would save him, but it didn't.
We knew it wasn't going to. I mean, that was the most predictable moment to me in the whole thing. Like, as soon as he's like, yay, I was like, you're going to wake up and there's still going to be a bunch of Gorn standing around you.
Yeah. There were certainly a lot of freeze frame moments in that, especially in the museum.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Where, you know, there's a lot of obvious ships in there and stuff you really have to look for. And one question is, so there's the bird of prey there, which was an important thing. So is this the bird of prey that shows up in Picard? Right?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows? Because it's an old ship. How many of these are left around, right, in the 24th century?
I look forward to your conspiracy article about it.
I'll get all my red tape together and I'll put it all together.
Yeah, get cracking. Make that bulletin board with all the lines on it. All right.
The great, I mean, I really like the Tendi one. I think that was maybe my favorite. I don't know. I just got a kick out of how she redacted the people and what they were saying, but it was obvious, you know, what it was, the way they redacted Romulus, and everyone had the stripes over their eyes. And we learned that, Ransom has a neck tattoo, which I thought was very fitting for his character.
And we learned that she knows martial arts.
Yeah, that was a little weird. So that's another thing that we just have to kind of go, oh, okay, well, she knows martial arts now.
I liked her with her little roller taking the cat hair off the conference room chair, too.
Now, of course, Boimler got a little, he never had anything to do with the missions of saving Klar and, you know, going into Romulus. So he didn't have a piece. So his piece was all just these crazy stories about the senior officers, all of which were very meta. You know, you had the salt vampire
did you notice the salt vampire's outfit and hair? It matched.
Her name was Marianne.
So the Marianne name didn't do anything for me, but I was like, wait, that hair, I remembered the hair. So I went back and looked, and in the man trap, when she steps out and she leaves Kirk and McCoy in there and she meets Darnell, who she then kills, she's wearing that outfit and has her hair like that.
Now, of course, his biggest flashback was the Q flashback, which we knew was coming, and we talked about in a previous podcast, and we had a theory, right, that Q was just going to pop in and out.
For one second.
So we were wrong. Somewhat wrong. I mean, he wasn't there a long time. But there was kind of an important story element. So he wasn't part of the plot, but he was an important, making an important point, I guess, to be there, right?
What do you think his point was?
Well, it was Boimler's point that the senior officers aren't perfect. They don't know what they're doing because, you know, so Q pops in, he does his thing. He makes them all play some weird game that makes no sense. It's like football and soccer and chess and poker and who knows what else. And they're, you know, they have to prove humanity deserves to exist. And they're all like, they didn't know what to do. Right. You know, they were all very good. We have no idea how they got out of it. But it, I thought, you know, it made that point, and it was kind of a good use of Q, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he was making fun of himself as well as making fun of his friendship with Picard. It was well done.
Right. Well, that was the final, that was, he kind of came in as a button at the end and had that funny thing about Picard and Vineyards. There was a few.
There were a bunch of wine and vineyard jokes.
Right. Because, and I feel like that's all tied to In Vino Veritas, right? So, which is In Wine Truth. So I think that's why there were multiple references. And so what do you think the joke was? Were they making fun of Star Trek? Because Mariner goes, there's nothing to do on Earth except hang out at vineyards.
Go to soul food restaurant.
And because to me, I've always, I don't know if I've said it on this pod or another pod, but it's always bothered me that you think about how many episodes of Star Trek there have been, and there hasn't really been enough stuff on Earth, right? Well, and so,
I don't need a lot of stuff on Earth.
Yeah, I mean, some people would argue that's the whole point of the show.
I would argue
that. But I've always wanted to know more about what life was like for the average Federation citizen. And you feel like you don't really have a good grasp of that.
There's that random Voyager episode, Non Sequitur, where you sort of see what Harry Kim's life was like.
That's true. And he still bought coffee in the morning, just like we all go to Starbucks, with money that doesn't exist. But I thought it was kind of making fun of that we just don't know what people are doing on Earth. Are they just going to soul food restaurants and hanging out at vineyards like Sisko and Picard?
Right. Yeah, I felt like the soul food restaurant was more of like a fun mention. And I think some of the Picard wine jokes are just because he's such a revered character that it's fun to sort of poke at him just a little bit.
Right. Although, let's get nitpicky here. Okay, so this is 2380. Right,
so he's not making wine yet.
Yeah, he is on the USS Enterprise E as captain, and for I forget. Well, until the Hoba Star incident, which I guess is in 6 years after this or something.
But you know what? The same way, to me, that's just a fun mention that does acknowledge the new show. The same way they drop in original series episode titles into their conversation, like it's a comedy, and it's meant to poke at those things a little bit.
Right. So, and of course, Q is timeless. So the last time he saw Picard may have been in the future. He doesn't have a concept of time like the wormhole aliens. So in his view, Picard is already at the winery, right?
Right. And maybe that's all he's doing. It's in that he's, you know, before the first episode of Star Trek Picard, where Picard is just making wine. That's it. Walking around with his dog.
Now, speaking of Q, so he was another guest actor in this episode. There's yet another guest actor.
Yes.
Which people may not have noticed unless you're watching the credits at the end.
Which sometimes shrink, so I understand how you could miss it.
Right. which is Ken Mitchell.
Yay, Ken. Yeah.
Ken Mitchell, who's played three Klingons, four Klingons?
Yeah, three, Klingons? I think.
Three was, Klingons yeah. in two seasons of Discovery.
All related to each other.
Right. And you and I were debating as to who he was. We had it down to either the Andorian or the Bug Captain, and actually reached out to Ken to confirm, because I didn't want to get this wrong, and he confirmed he was the Bug Captain. Did he have a name? I can't remember now. The ship had a name.
Yeah, the bugs had a name. The ship had a name, but the captain did not have a name.
Right. And we still don't understand why they were upset or what they were upset about. And
what seemed to be the concept of gratitude seemed to really piss them off.
Right, which kicked off the whole notion of miscommunication for the episode. It kind of set... You know, it all started with the miscommunication between aliens, and it ended with the miscommunication with aliens. And it was a bit of a recurring thing for the episode. But it was good to see him. And I also want to give a little bit of a shout out to Paul Scheer. I'm a big fan of his. And remember when he was announced a few weeks before the show went live? And I thought, oh, that's great. You know, he's a very funny guy. And then he's played the head of, or you know, the chief of engineering, right? And up till this episode, he hasn't done anything funny, right? Do you think?
Yeah, not much of anything, really.
And so it was good that they finally gave him some comedy to work with, and I thought he was very good, and hopefully we'll see more of him or hear more of him as we go forward.
He had two really funny lines when Rutherford was dragging him in and he was suffering from oxygen deprivation or whatever was going on there. Did you hear the two things that he said were...
Well, the first one was obvious, right? So the first one, he goes, Mark Twain has a gun.
Yep. Mark Twain's got a gun.
which is, don't tell me, God. Oh, episode names, two-parter.
Come on.
The snake people, timeless?
No, times timeless. Time, arrow.
Times arrow. I knew time was in it. And it was time travel, times arrow, to the people with the snake thing, and they suck people's souls or whatever. Okay. And the second one, he said something like, look out, Tasha, there's a garbage bag behind you or something like
right.
that.
So the first time he said it, the first time I watched it, I didn't hear Tasha. I just heard garbage bags behind you. And I thought it was some kind of reference to the Borg smelling like garbage bags or something, which Mariner had said. Right? Didn't she say something about how they smelled like garbage bags? But when I watched it again and then he said Tasha, I was like, oh, because that big Armus character looks like a big garbage bag.
Right, that's what I thought.
Like, yeah.
I thought it might have been some weird deep cut about how they built the Armus costume. So I did a little search. Like, maybe they did use garbage bags, but apparently they didn't.
Aww.
And I did a little rabbit hole, and they built these costumes, but apparently they kept on dissolving, and it was a real frustration for the crew because they would put them in the goo, and the goo was dissolving the costumes, and so.
Oh, and the goo had like Metamucil and stuff in it. That I remember.
Yeah, it was very gross. Yeah.
Those are such good rabbit holes. I have to say, I spend far too much time on those rabbit holes just related to anything I'm doing for a Trek movie.
Of course, the concept art was much cooler than the final execution of Armus. So that was pre-CGI, and it was too bad because that was not a good character, and... Let's just move on. But he did have some fun stuff, and the stuff about the Denobulan flesh eating penis. I think they didn't say the word penis.
He cuts him off. He says, and then he cuts him off.
Yeah,
he says it eats right through your pants.
Yeah.
Terrible way to go. Yeah.
that was great. So I don't know if there's anything more to say about the various stories. Right.
No, well, let's talk about the funny. What was your favorite joke? I mean, I had so many, but what were your big ones?
Well, I always liked the little throwaway ones, and you know, the two Romulans rocking down the corridor, and one guy goes, "You know, I hate Remans."
Yeah. That made me laugh out loud too.
And of course, this is just 1 year after Star Trek Nemesis, so you know that's kind of a hot topic on Romulus,
right?
Is Remans are dicks, right? They took over the government and got a lot of people killed. So yeah,
I hate those guys. Yeah,
I hate those guys. And my other favorite thing is a character moment, which is as Tendi and the three of them were being in the tank of eels, and then they turned on the burners for some reason, and the eels started screaming, and Tendi started being worried about the eels because she's such a sweetheart. I forget what she says, but she's like, oh no, the eels, you know. So after all episode, we've been being warned about being eeled and, you know, going into the eels, and the eels were this big scary thing, but eventually we felt sorry for the eels.
Well, she did, but yeah.
Well, if you look closely, like, they looked in pain and they were writhing around and they really weren't biting anyone because they were being boiled to death. So I kind of felt bad for the eels, too.
Yeah, that's true. They probably didn't want all that going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, why were they there? Why didn't they did ask the question of why didn't you say something when we were being put in the eels? And they were like, well, we didn't want to offend
the customs. Yeah.
Their local customs. Yeah. So they're taking that a little bit too far. obviously. What were your favorite jokes?
Well, I loved, first of all, any eel mentions. So you may go un-eeled for now. And today didn't have to end in eels were great. I also loved, my other two, I think, that we haven't mentioned are Rutherford's little song that was about rotating all day long while singing my rotation song, which is so me and my family. I can't even. And then I can't say this one on our podcast because I don't know what arrangements we've made for words you're not supposed to say. But when the doctor says, guess I'll have to shave my, and then right. They don't say the rest of the word. But that,
if you look at her lips, it's a two syllable word. And I think it ends in a Y.
There's nobody who doesn't know what that word is when they're watching it, but it made me laugh out loud. That was just, and it's so crass and pointless and yet funny, which is funny because it's one of the things I was worried about the show before it started was that there would be a lot of that, but I don't mind a little bit of it. And that was funny.
Yeah. They've done well with not leaning too into that because as an adult animation, they could, especially on a streaming service, they could really go for it. They don't have to bleep these things out.
Yeah. No, this was the most swearing I think we've had in one episode from them so far, too.
Yeah. Now, but now that I think about it, because there was that line at the end where Mariner goes, we aren't dealing with your any more of your Q bullshit.
Yeah.
None of the, do they bleep bullshit or not?
I don't think they bleep that one. And then there's another... I don't care about swearing. I just don't want to offend people who do care about it. So I won't say it, but it was the F word where it was so clear what, like they bleeped so little of it that you could hear the whole word.
Yeah. That's like the way they bleep these things. It's very, they even make fun of it when he says Romulans and it's like Romu bleep.
Yeah.
Lins.
Yeah.
So they are being very obvious. This episode, I mean, obviously references and stuff. I felt like this is one of those episodes where there were some great references, some real deep cuts, like the one you mentioned before, but some other stuff just felt gratuitous. Describing Khan as a space seed.
Right.
Just didn't work for me. Although
I like the drumhead mic drop.
Yeah, that did work. So, you know, it's just a kind of pick and choose thing, and sometimes it works. Roga Danar, great reference. It's okay to reference Khan.
That's a great episode. I love that Roga Danar episode. So I was super happy that they had a prolonged discussion about him.
Yeah. And Tendi has a thing for Khan, apparently, and his thick chest.
She also mentioned having to pee, which I think, is she the first character since Zef from Cochrane and First Contact who actually mentioned that she pees?
Maybe they're the only two.
It might be just them. Nobody else does.
Yeah, absolutely. So there was some stuff that I felt was references to other things. The Klar looks like the bad guy from Galaxy Quest. I feel, I could be wrong, but kind of feels like an homage to me. There was a mention of a crazy Ivan, and, you know, pick your poison. It's either a Firefly reference or a Red October reference.
I looked it up and got Firefly because I was like, what is that? I never watched Firefly, but I was like, that's got to be something. And then I found it as a Firefly reference.
Right. But obviously it was Red October first. I mean, obviously it was a real thing first, which is a maneuver used by Russian submarines.
I like that you say obviously. I didn't know that. Not obviously to me. I was like, what obviously. Is Crazy Ivan? I've never heard of it.
This is like those things I put in the reviews, like when I mention, you know, Halo dropping, and it's I always say these are guy things. So, you know, any guy who's watched the military channel knows what Crazy Ivan is and what Halo is.
Or yeah, I mean,
has played enough video games, perhaps.
I'm particularly ignorant of those kinds of things, but I'm always up for a good Google.
Excellent. So, in general, I feel like the reference level was good, but a couple of them just felt a little fan servicey, and into this thing where they're just making a reference, but if you weren't a fan, you wouldn't get it, and there's no joke, and so it's kind of dead air. And well, even if you are a fan, it's like, man, you know, we didn't need that.
Well, I thought the fan dance was funny, I thought. And also, I there was one where I felt like they were referencing, this was like a nice deep cut where they didn't say it, when the doctor goes onto the bridge and she's on the wrong ship. I thought it was a nice combination of Remember Me and Parallels from TNG at the same time. Because she says, oh, and nobody seems to know who I am. Which was like Remember Me, where people are disappearing and nobody remembers them. And then Parallels were where every ship had something slightly different with Worf. So those kinds of things I think they did well. And yeah, some of the, like the contest thing, maybe we didn't need so much of that.
And I liked how it's a good kind of comment on Star Trek, that instead of thinking she's on the wrong ship, she jumps to parallel universe, which shows you how crazy life is in Starfleet, that you're like, oh yeah, this must be a parallel universe, not I walked onto the wrong ship because they all look the same.
I sometimes think I'm in a parallel universe.
God.
Just saying.
Yeah, well, 2020 is the worst timeline.
Yeah.
That is for sure.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so what would you say was your favorite thing overall about the whole episode? Or right. Sorry, do you have any or final thoughts? Really anything?
Well, I mean, I really did like how I liked the structure. I liked the flashbacks. I liked, you know, it felt like they were trying. There's some episodes of Star Trek that have done this, but maybe I think they were going for other things like Unusual Suspects and some other kind of cinematic formats.
I think it's just The Usual Suspects. Right?
What did I say?
Unusual Suspects.
Oh, The Usual Suspects. That's right. I'm sorry.
Sorry, just saying it so we don't get 8 million comments.
Yes, yes. The Kaiser Sose movie.
There you
and
go.
There's obviously, there's been many, you know, the Double Indemnity and The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. And there's all so many, you know, great both courtroom dramas and other movies that have used this structure.
Yeah.
And I like the structure. And I like that they're continuing to experiment with the show and trying out different things and not just saying, let's do our version of a courtroom show. Let's both do a twist on it and bolder with our approach.
Yeah. And I would say also, like, even though I didn't need Boimler explaining the premise of the episode as well as the show, which I felt he did unnecessarily, I also think the overall thing is the mission actually went really well. And those ensigns didn't need to know what they were doing for the mission to go well. So everything is sort of working the way it should be.
Yeah, there was just, again, miscommunication, right?
Yeah.
But they hung a lantern on that as opposed to relying on it necessarily.
And I would just say Kurtwood Smith for the win across the board.
Yeah. And I mentioned this in my review. I like how they're building up a roster of characters. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever see him again, but, you know, add him to the list. As I said in the review, all great shows, but especially animated comedies. If you think about The Simpsons and you've seen the posters of all the characters in Springfield.
Yeah.
You know, so step by step, you got Badgie and, you know, they're building up a roster. And I feel like, it's great to see all of these characters. You know, we probably will never see Clark again, but, you know, they are doing a good job in creating new and interesting characters that I do want to see again.
No, and if they get a long run, like we know there are going to be two seasons, but if we get a very long run, who knows? There are lots of opportunities for people to come back.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we've pretty much covered the episode. I think it's weird. Like, as we talk about it, I feel like I like it now more. I think talking to you makes me like the show more.
Yay!
It's one of my favorite things of doing the podcast. I mean, yeah. Not the show more, but this particular episode.
Yeah, no, same. I like last time, I think our grades went up, maybe. Or one of us went down and one of us went up.
Well, and I had to bring you up.
Yeah.
So this time it was the opposite of that.
Yeah. So maybe we're in the beam of celebration. that could be why. That made me laugh too.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, it was a good episode. I did enjoy it. But I, yeah, talking about, the more I talk about it, the more I enjoy it in my memory.
So go ahead.
let's move on to the wrap up and our Trek bets.
Well, I don't really have a bit, something new I learned, but I just have a reminder for fans of the new shows that the Star Trek Picard Season 1 Blu-ray is coming out on the 6th. So by the time you hear this podcast, you may just be a few days away to get your pre-orders in. We will have a full review on the site probably that week. But it's got a lot of good special features and it looks worth checking out. There's also a DVD and there's a steelbook if you're into that kind of thing as well. So now, Lori, I understand you have a more personal...
I do.
...track bit you want to talk about.
I do. So bear with me, people. But some of you know I was the supervising producer on After Trek, which was the post show for Star Trek Discovery's first season. Which is re-airing starting tonight, actually. Not After Trek, but Discovery on CBS. And so our team, which was a great team and we loved making the show, we suffered a very, very big loss last week. And I just want to tribute him briefly. Jeremy Hutchins was our executive producer. He's the person who hired me to work on the show. He was an extraordinary person. And he died very suddenly. And I remember our interview because every time I suggested an idea for the show, he said, "Get out of my head! Get out of my head! What are you doing in there?" And he is the kind of person that he was the coolest person in the room and the nerdiest person in the room at the same time. He loved Star Trek, Star Wars, Marvel, wrestling. There was a memorial Zoom for him because people can't get together. And there were 100 of us there with people waiting to be let in as other people left. So Jeremy Hutchins, I love you. I miss you. He was a huge creative force at After Trek who kept the tone of the workday fun and wonderful, came up with great ideas, let me do all my ridiculous ideas without kicking me out of his office. And so what I'm going to do, just so, because After Trek isn't on the CBS All Access site anymore. So I'm going to put up we called it a sizzle reel. So after the first half of the season, there was a break. It was the mid-season break, and we made a sizzle reel of everything that had happened so far. So I'm going to put that up on the site so people can look at it and remember After Trek. And for those of you who are not in North America, you can still watch it, and it might be a fun thing for you to do after, you know, after each episode of Discovery. You can watch Discovery and then watch it. We did great interviews. We had a beautiful set, tons of little packages and interstitials. And if anyone wouldn't mind drinking a toast in Jeremy's memory, that would be nice. He was a great person. So come to the site. You'll get to see the reel. It's fun. And there are also packages from the show that are still on YouTube if you want to go find them. One of my favorites is Discovery by the Numbers, if you want to go find that one.
It was a great after show, and Jeremy just sounds like such a great guy. I wish I had a chance to meet him, and it's great that he was able to help put together that show with so much love for Star Trek.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been the same without him, for sure. He just brought in such a great, diverse group of people to come in and make it too, and was open to everybody's ideas, which is why the show was so fun. I mean, the guests who came on all had a great time. The audience had a great time. We did give them drinks before the show, so that probably helped. we had a bar. It was fun. And this is the anniversary of our premiere today as we record on the 24th.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because the Star Trek Discovery Season 1
is airing on CBS tonight.
Right. And this was the same exact day in 2017.
Yep. Yeah. And it was a great day. It was just a wonderful, exciting day. We were all so happy. Making a fun
show. Because
you
guys did it live, which is pretty daring.
For the first half, we did it live. And then after that, we didn't. But yeah, because they changed it, and it was fine. I like doing it. I love live TV. It was really fun doing it live. But there were some advantages to being able to do stuff again if it didn't quite work, if something went wrong.
So that's it for All Access Star Trek for this week. We have two more episodes of Lower Decks to go. Next week's based on the previews. looks like they're going to be taking a crack at the J.J. Abrams movies. At least there's a lot of lens flares and kind of movie over the top kind of jokes in the trailer. So that looks like it might be a lot of fun.
Oh, I haven't seen the trailer. I'll go watch it.
After that, the big season finale, which is apparently going to be amazing. And then we're going to have the season premiere of Star Trek Discovery. I am going to try to get the supplemental with Will Wheaton. We are thinking about doing a special Discovery Season 3 preview as well. So keep tuned to the TrekMovie.com podcast network. And more episodes of All Access Star Trek, both every Friday, and supplementals coming in the next few weeks.
And check out our site. We put up links to everything that we've talked about, including all the news stories. And we would love to get feedback from you guys on how we're doing. So come by and let us know.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Bye-bye.